Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
Yeah, Miami. South Beach, bringing the heat. Can y'all feel that?
Oh, man, must be the 9 o'clock hour on a Friday as the Biff.
He's got some moves. What do you think?
He's dancing back there. It looks like he's getting ready to go down to South Beach to a club. He's playing, you know, Will Smith, Miami. I don't know if he's going to wear the Yager shirt to the club, but that would seem
exactly what I'm wearing right now to the club.
Right, that would seem to be the Biff move.
I think he came out of a club to come here, right?
These were the clothes out of my car.
Yeah, he changed quickly, and he's pretending as if he got a bunch of sun last night, but really he's flustered and everything from being out all night celebrating July 4th.
I would like you to wear that same shirt, T-shirt, Yager T-shirt, with the Biff across the back, just around South Beach for a while. See if you get any play.
That actually would be a great conversation starter, right?
Yes.
So the Biff, just put the Biff on the back of any of your shirt, Yager or otherwise, and just walk around South Beach and see how many women bother to ask you about the nickname. That's a great way just to get in to start a conversation.
It's like some people walk a puppy around, right? Just for a conversation. You got the Biff nickname. He's turning that over in his head.
Yeah, he's
all right. I'm trying to write down some notes. You guys talk
seems a bit confounded by this. He is jotting something down, probably gibberish, but
it's a bunch of squiggly lines.
Yeah, I can tell. By the way, that's the Biff. Dave Hyde, Greg Likens, as we fill in for Joe Rose and Zach Krantz on this Friday. We hope everybody had a great July 4th. The Biff, remind us again, what did you do today or yesterday for July 4th?
I hung out with my boys.
Right, what'd you call it?
Pooling and bullying. I don't see what there's a problem with that.
And was there billiards involved, or were you by an actual pool?
We were actually by a pool, physical pool.
Got it.
Which is the pooling part of it.
Right. So you were pooling, and then what's the last part?
It's, you know, cooling it with the boys. So it's bullying.
He's kind of trying to get out of it now.
He's
you see that?
It now. Yeah.
He is.
I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Pooling and bullying is
pooling
what you
and
did?
Pooling, yeah.
Okay. Well, that sounds like something the Biff would do. I
don't
know, Dave.
It's kind of like balling and...
I mean, look, I'm an old man. You can throw anything over me with bullying. I would have no idea, right?
So I had never heard of it until a few hours ago when we first asked Biff.
We got the three generations working here, the older generation, 30-something, and the millennial, right? And
yes.
he's throwing bullying at us.
But, you know, the thing that, just to take everybody behind the curtain, is he said pooling and bullying earlier, and without me asking what bullying meant, I said, is bullying because you're hanging with your boys? He goes, yes. He didn't seem to know the meaning behind it, just something they said.
I don't remember this. Do you remember this, Dave? I don't
know. I remember the conversation. I'm not sure. I took it when we asked him about what bullying meant, it was an inside joke with his boys.
You know, you can't reveal your inside jokes because then they're not really inside anymore. They're outside.
Okay, see.
But you can't have a radio show by saying it's an inside joke.
This is what the Biff does really well. He'll just pick up on whatever was last said, and he'll just ride those coattails. So, like, you just gave a decent explanation.
I gave one out.
And he's like, oh, yeah, that's why. Right? Like, earlier I said something different. He goes, yeah, that's why. You know, like, he just goes with whatever is just most recently been said, as assuming it makes him sound like it makes some sort of sense.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I knew. That's perfect.
Oh, we got somebody via the text line, 56022, Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line that says, I think there's somebody out there going by the name of The Biff. We're looking at him right now, and it's not a pretty sight. We got some other people who are upset about you saying get over it about LeBron James.
Yeah, I figured that. That always happens.
That was
going to
happen.
That was coming.
And in fact, one of the texts is so profane, Dave, I cannot even attempt to read it. But we're just going to leave it at that.
8 years later. No, 5 years later, still profane.
5 years later on this one. Yes. Somebody else says, how about LeBron growing up instead of being a passive-aggressive jerk?
Well, he is passive-aggressive. I'll give him that. That is a... In fact, I'm interested if Kawhi goes to the Lakers. You got a passive-aggressive general manager, and then you have a passive-passive personality in Kawhi. It just seems – there must be some aggressive gene in him for him to play that way.
And, you know, Anthony Davis seems a bit passive-aggressive as well. I don't know if he just lets Rich Paul do the talking for him. But, you know, if you read into it, he was wearing the That's All Folks t-shirt,
yes,
like going to the Pelicans game.
That was just immature.
Right. So whether he's passive-aggressive or he just needs to grow up, I'm not sure. But I feel like the LeBron passive-aggressiveness via Rich Paul is kind of rubbing off on Anthony Davis. And so there's a lot of that dynamic that appears to be in play for the Lakers.
It'll be a show. Will it be a good show? That's what if they get Kawhi, three of the best five players in the league, they're going to win.
Yes.
You just get a couple decent parts around you just to make sure that the wheels don't fall off. And you're going to step on the court with three of the best five players every game.
That's a scary proposition. It really is. Somebody else says LeBron has redeemed himself in my eyes by getting rid of LeVar Ball. Unfortunately, he did so at the expense of his son, Lonzo. Hey, whatever it takes, get that LeVar guy out of there. Now, something we were kind of joking about off the air, Dave, is the fact that ESPN is hyping up this summer league, which it technically already began in Sacramento, but the Vegas Summer League is always kind of the spotlight one where everybody highlights that. And the Vegas Summer League starts tonight. And I remember just after the draft concluded, they were promoting the fact that on night one, they had the Pelicans and Knicks scheduled to face each other. And that was going to feature, of course, Zion Williamson and RJ Barrett, former teammates at Duke, first and third picks, respectively. And tonight they're going to face off against each other out in Vegas. And that's one of five games that ESPN is televising tonight, including a Heat game against a team from China, which is at 5:30. So we're going to get to see the Heat on national TV in the Summer League. And then we've got this showcase game, which we've discussed. I know that the timing of this works well for them because there's not as much going on, but the Summer League has turned into an absolute attention-grabbing situation, Dave, which, like, what is this? This is like the last few years where suddenly this has risen to prominence? Because in years past, this is going on, like in Orlando, it's gone on in Vegas, and I feel like diehard fans paid attention, but for the most part, it wasn't really talked about.
I don't think you can make enough of the Zion versus RJ Barrett matchup. I mean, here you have, if RJ Barrett shows him up, Zion's going to be a waste of a draft pick. I mean, we would see the downfall of the whole New Orleans offseason if Zion doesn't play well tonight. This is, you know, and I hope not only does ESPN highlight this and advertise it, but they have this big roundtable about this matchup and what it means for the future of these franchises.
They do, and it sounds like Skip Hyde is next to me right now. Well, but
I did say if I had my radio show, I would have my Skip Bayless moment where I just go completely off the top with a nonsensical, and I'd be louder and even more nonsensical. But that would be a good example.
But to your point, like, we know what's going to happen. Monday morning, when, you know, everybody gets back to work next week and you get these talk shows after the weekend, people are going to be breaking down the matchup. And if RJ Barrett happens to score more points than Zion Williamson, or if he plays a lot better, whatever the situation is, there's going to be a question asked on one of these ESPN shows or the Fox Sports 1 shows in which they say, what does this mean for the upcoming season? As if we can make some...
And you can't answer. Look, if you have these jobs... You can't answer. It means nothing.
No, you can't.
Because I can say that, but you're in that job to give something. Well, it shows he needs to work on this, and someone will go over the top. The Knicks got the steal.
Yeah.
The Knicks got the steal in this draft.
Somebody will say that, oh, the Knicks' future actually looks a lot better than we thought a week ago and all this other stuff. So
One of the bad things about sports now and 24/7 of the internet, of talk radio, is trying to make something out of everything. OTAs in the NFL example.
Yeah.
You know, you got, oh, well, so-and-so had a great practice. It's May. Give me a break, okay? They're not having wearing pads. It's summer league. Give me a break. They're not. What's the competition?
Right. It's a bunch of guys who want to be in the NBA but aren't guaranteed to be in the NBA, or a bunch of draft picks. And
they should be allowed to play with that proviso that, hey, I'm trying to make the league.
Right.
You don't have to analyze every game of mine on national television. This is for the teams themselves. This is, we're putting in work. I'm working on a shot. I'm working on a move. Okay. This isn't game 7 of the NBA finals. I need to develop, you know, this part of my game. So I'm really stressing this.
That gets lost though. I mean, this day and age, we want the hot takes. We want the definitive conclusions drawn at every turn, but it's funny, Dave. I like that. I think tonight this is going to be a groundbreaking
moment.
This
is it. This is it. Come back. I'm on with Zach Monday, and I will be watching tonight. And
Zion RJ, this will be the argument ender tonight. Who will have the better career based on what they do in their first summer league game? Dave, we're going to come back. Mike Florio from ProFootballTalk.com, Pro Football Talk Live, will join the show. We got a lot to talk about with him. Stay tuned. That's next here on QAM.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
Welcome back here to 560 WQAM. Greg Likens, Dave Hyde, filling in for Joe Rose and Zach Krantz on this Friday morning. Hope everybody had a nice 4th of July yesterday. As you know what that music means, Mike Florio joining us here from ProFootballTalk.com, Pro Football Talk Live. Mike, thank you very much. Happy, I guess, belated 4th of July to you. How's everything going this morning?
Hey, everything's great today. Hope you guys had a great 4th. Hope everybody had a safe and happy 4th. And now, and this is great because this is that one day kind of wedged between the 4th and the weekend where if you are working, what the hell are you really doing? So here's to American productivity and ingenuity going down the tubes, at least for one day.
That's what we're saving the economy. That's what we're doing.
Mike, you just summed up the show. We started this morning. What the hell are we doing here? Yeah. Hey, Mike, I unfortunately want to start on a not-so-nice note this morning. We got some bad news yesterday. What did you make of the horrific accident that has now left Dolphins defensive tackle Kendrick Norton with his arm amputated?
I mean, it was just shocking as the details came out yesterday morning and the first word emerged that his arm had been amputated at the scene. That is as horrific as I could imagine an accident being, short of someone actually dying. And it just shows you how quickly your life can change dramatically. People get behind the wheel of a car and they have this strange sense of invincibility, especially now that we just assume airbags are going to protect us from anything and everything. But you still can have everything in an instant, everything you've worked for, everything you've built, everything on which your fundamental happiness is based, which is having a sound mind and body, gone in a flash. And it really is a scary moment. And, you know, my heart goes out to Kendrick and his family and the Dolphins. And I just can't imagine anyone going through something like that.
Yeah, 22-year-old life, you know, his life's been directed one way, and now he's got somehow redirected, I guess, with loss of an arm. I guess we're in that
instantly too. I mean, it just shows you how fast it can happen. And you know, all the cliches about embracing every moment, living every moment, living life to the fullest, because you never know when it's going to end. You also never know when it's going to fundamentally change in a way that your old life becomes a ghost to your new life. And I think in a lot of our minds, it's all or nothing. It's we live or we die. And hey, we could die at any time. Yeah, you also can end up having a completely different existence than the one you've had. And that's what Kendrick Norton's current predicament is. And it's just, you know, and again, we should not take for granted the time we have, because we never know when it's going to end, and we never know when it's going to dramatically change.
Yeah, for sure. Mike Florio from ProFootballTalk.com, Pro Football Talk Live, joining us here on 560 WQAM. Mike, going to something completely different, but this week I know that you've been compiling your top storylines for the upcoming season, and saw yesterday number 20 on those storylines is about the young quarterbacks in the AFC East competing potentially with the Patriots. How are you viewing the second-year signal callers, including Josh Rosen, in the AFC East as this season approaches?
Well, I look at it as advantage Patriots, at least for this year. Now, look, it could be good news for the Dolphins, the Bills, and the Jets when and if Tom Brady ever actually does retire. It's amazing. When he was drafted, these guys were either 3 years old or younger in the division. Sam Darnold was 2. Josh Allen and Josh Rosen were 3 when Tom Brady was drafted. So at some point, he's going to be gone. And someone's going to compete to at least try to fill the void. I don't know that there will be much of a void with the Patriots because of the presence of Belichick, but at least for now, when you've got 6 of your games to be played against guys who are entering year 2 of their NFL careers at quarterback, and you're also playing all of the 4 teams of the AFC North, 2 of which have guys also entering the second year of their careers at quarterback in Baker Mayfield and Lamar Jackson, and that's half of your schedule. 8 of your games are games that Bill Belichick should be able to draw up a game plan in his sleep and or on the toilet, right? And I think it's going to be a shock if they lose any of those games. So there's 8 right there. There's your 8. So the question, you go 4-4 in the other 8, you're the 2 seed, you're the 1 seed, and you pencil them back in for the 9th straight AFC championship game. And you know, there's been so much talk about a lack of parity in the NBA. Nobody pays attention to the fact that even though we delude ourselves all offseason long thinking, hey, this guy's got a chance, this team's got a chance, that team's got a chance, at the end of the day, hello, Patriots. And I have a feeling we're going to be right on that same roller coaster this year.
Yeah, and that is the great understated story of their dynasty, the fact that none of the other AFC East teams have mounted even a, you know, the Jets had 2 years where they did mount a scare, but it wasn't sustainable, because they've never had quarterbacks. 3 franchises for 20 years haven't been able to find a quarterback.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, there's 3 types of teams in the NFL. Teams that have franchise quarterbacks, teams that don't, and thus are constantly looking for one, and then a team that's got a guy that they're really not sure which way it's going to break, and sometimes they hang on to him way too long, like the Dolphins did with Ryan Tannehill, as you guys well know. But it does come down to quarterback play, and the Patriots have had the advantage of 20 years of being able to have a great team of their own, but also no one to truly challenge them. We talked recently on PFT Live about when and if there will be another Peyton Manning-Tom Brady rivalry, and you know the problem is, for today's NFL, Peyton Manning and the Colts controlled the AFC South, and Tom Brady and the Patriots controlled the AFC East, which made it more likely they would play every year as defending division champions in the regular season, and that they'd meet in the playoffs more often than not. Now, and this is good, once Tom Brady's gone, that we've got this cluster of great quarterbacks that will keep, other than in the AFC East, at least for now, quarterbacks from dominating and developing that knee-jerk, hey, they're going to meet every year, they're going to meet every year. I mean, you know, it could be Baker Mayfield and Patrick Mahomes, but how are the Browns going to consistently dominate the AFC North? It could be Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes. How are the Texans going to consistently dominate the AFC South? The Chiefs are going to have a hard time consistently dominating the AFC West. So I think it's good for football, but, you know, I love greatness. I don't want to be one of these guys that just resents the Patriots' success. It's amazing what they've done. But football will be better off when they are no longer appearing in every single AFC championship game.
Yeah, I think everybody in the AFC East outside of New England certainly agrees with that sentiment.
Well, I got a Stockholm Syndrome thing going on with the Patriots. I've been captive. I'm kind of respecting them now.
You become a Patriots fan?
Well, at least I respect what they're doing.
You're helping them install cameras in the Dolphins locker room? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, if only it was that easy.
Mike Florio joining us from ProFootballTalk.com, Pro Football Talk Live. Mike, this week we've learned that Ezekiel Elliott will not be suspended for his incident in Las Vegas. Why did the commissioner feel the need to issue a statement on this? I understand that this was an issue, but also it was kind of oddly stated in the way it was released. What did you make of that?
Well, 2 things. First, I believe that the commissioner dragged Ezekiel Elliott to the league office on Tuesday, basically to give him a scare, right? And this is it. This is it because he's a repeat offender. If they had found a violation of the personal conduct policy, and there's enough play in the language of the policy that the commissioner could have found a violation. There was a menacing assault. And, you know, you can assault someone without ever hitting them. When you make them in fear of an impending battery, that's an assault. He got in the kid's face and the kid fell down, whether Elliott pushed him or not. It easily could have been a conduct policy violation and another suspension. But I think the commissioner brought him to New York to make sure he understands one more false move and you are going to have a serious suspension, and no one can say you're surprised by it. This is how it works. This is how it's going to be. And also, I've noticed post Ezekiel Elliott's suspension from 2017, which I think was horribly unfair from the standpoint of the process that he got, because he didn't get a fair process to defend himself, but he was suspended 6 games without being arrested or charged. Since then, I've noticed a softening. And I don't know how much of this is motivated by the ratings issues from 2016 and 2017, but I think somebody at the league office realized, you know what? It's nice that we have all this power and that we're willing to use it, and we like to suspend these guys whenever and wherever we can, but we're kind of hurting ourselves by keeping talented young players off the field. So I've noticed it primarily with the substance abuse policy, where the league seems to bend over backwards to not throw guys out and tends to try to work with them to get them back in. And I think we're seeing it somewhat with the personal conduct policy. They tried to look the other way with Kareem Hunt last year until the video surfaced in late November. And I think with Elliott, they're giving him a pass here when they easily could have thrown the book at him, because they don't want to be in the business of putting great young players out of the game, because they understand if your great young players aren't on the field, people are less likely to watch your games. And it's self-preservation, if nothing else, that has accounted for this softening of the commissioner's approach, in my opinion.
Well, that's interesting, because I've been wondering, Tyreek Hill, what is going on there?
Yeah, and this one is odd to me. And look, one of the fundamental points that I'll make about Tyreek Hill or any of these guys, until the decision is made, nobody knows what the commissioner is going to do, unless your source is the commissioner. And I doubt that he's calling up reporters saying, hey, you know, just for your information, I'm going to impose a 4-game suspension. It's all predictions. It's all guesswork. And so let me go ahead and engage in some guesswork. I've seen people suggest that Tyreek Hill's facing a maximum suspension of 4 games. I'd be stunned if the minimum isn't 4 games, because of his history, because of that audio recording that we heard on the first night of the draft, when he said to the mother of his child, the woman that he admitted to having choked and beaten while pregnant in December of 2014, you need to be terrified of me too, with an expletive after that. I'd be shocked if that's not enough to get him a 4-game suspension, because last year, Jimmy Smith, the Ravens cornerback, was suspended 4 games for making threats and engaging in emotional abuse of the mother of his child. So there's going to be a lot of criticism of the commissioner if Hill gets nothing or less than 4 games. The question is, does he get more than that because of potential discipline of his 3-year-old son that went too far, because of conditions at the household that resulted in the government stepping in and removing the child? That's the real question. I think that the commissioner would just as soon like this all to go away, but what we've seen in the past, when you've got a victim or a perceived victim, and in this case it's a victim who was clearly a physical victim in 2014 and the mother of the child, who was the victim of at least a threat this time around, I think the commissioner's still likely to err on the side of overdoing it. He's going to be less criticized if he overdoes it than if he underdoes it. And so, there are some people who think he's trying to find a way to not suspend Tyreek Hill at all. I don't think the commissioner will like the reaction publicly if he doesn't suspend Tyreek Hill. So, you know, even in this kindler, gentler period of Roger Goodell's time as the commissioner of the NFL, I think it's almost impossible to justify no suspension of Tyreek Hill.
Hey, Mike, last Saturday, the 40 Yards of Gold event took place at the BB&T Center in Sunrise, Florida, and, you know, they had $1 million prize. Marquise Goodwin won the whole thing, but I thought it was partially humorous and then also false advertising that Ted Ginn kind of was the one who generated all the buzz about this, and then he was a no-show after they billed him as being one of the competitors.
Well, he didn't show up. Dominic Rogers Cromartie didn't show up. There were other guys who were part of the initial field. I'm told they decided once Marquise Goodwin got in, why why are we doing this? Because there is a risk reward calculation that you engage in. You can win $1 million, but once Goodwin shows up, you ain't winning $1 million. So why are we really doing this? When any time, and you know, people are like, oh, you're being too concerned about it. Look, you show up at an event without your trainers, without your medical staff. You're going to run 40 yards as fast as you can multiple times. And yeah, you pop an Achilles tendon, you're done for the year. You ain't getting paid by your team. You pull a hamstring, you pull a calf muscle or something like that. You land on the non-football injury list at the start of training camp. You can have issues making the team. I mean, it just wasn't worth it for a lot of these guys, and I think that's what happened. With Ginn, there's never been an explanation. I don't know if at the end of the day he just didn't want to put up or shut up. I mean, it's easy for him to say he's the fastest guy in the NFL if he never actually runs, right? I can say I'm the fastest guy in the NFL as long as I don't run and prove that I'm not. So, look. I'm in favor, guys, of events in June that we can cover that are tangentially related to the NFL. But there was something about this one that just, it seemed far-fetched to me. It seemed overblown to me. And now the latest report that came out earlier this week, the guys who got checks were told don't try to cash them until Friday. It'll be interesting to see if Marquise Goodwin, with that big giant novelty check, if that thing's at least worth the cardboard that it's printed on, finding out at some point today if he tries to cash it.
Yeah, I hope this is another AAF situation or anything like that. Hey, Mike, always appreciate your time here on the Joe Rose Show. Have a great weekend, and I know they'll talk to you again next week.
All right, see you guys.
All right, there he is. Mike Florio from ProFootballTalk.com. Pro Football Talk Live joining us here on the program. As the 40 yards of gold event just popped up in Sunrise. I found out like a few days before that it was actually happening at the BB&T Center.
And my first thought was, is he really going to get paid $1 million?
Yeah.
Is he good? Is this just, you know, wink, wink, we're going to give you $1 million, or
just to get it off the ground and running?
Yes.
And,
yeah. Or did he really think, oh, I'm going to get $1 million, and he's not? Or is he actually? To me, that's that run to the bank. Might have been faster than that 40-yard sprint.
Yeah.
He should have been, as soon as he got that thing, ving, he's off to the bank to cash it, because that might not be cashing.
You're right. By the way, Biff, you guys had Ocho Cinco in studio, right, promoting the 40 yards of gold last week? That must have been pretty cool.
He was a very nice guy. It was actually really cool.
Yeah, so there you go. Thank you, Biff. That was enlightening. That's literally what I just said to you.
You're welcome.
You were the one who was here. I thought maybe you'd shed a little more light on that.
I think we're fleshing out the character of Biff.
We are.
If you'd like to hear more of it, the podcast, can hear it all there. Why would I tell you it all here when you can listen to the podcast?
All right.
I think the character of Biff should be this saying very obvious things.
I don't think that's a character. I think that's just natural for him.
But he can play it into a real character. He can keep it going.
Right.
See? There you go. I set him up. Perfect.
Biff, should we take a break here? What do you think?
That may be advised.
We got time for one more segment here. Stay tuned on 560 WQAM. Ah, a little Rebecca Black, huh?
Gotta take the hits.
You remember this song, Dave?
I don't. No.
Yeah, it was like a viral sensation. And, I mean, the song is pretty ridiculous. It's catchy, but it's like you listen to the lyrics.
It's annoying.
She just says fun. Her voice is absolutely annoying. The background on this is that her parents paid like a production company to put together this song. Like I don't know if she wrote the lyrics or not, but like she was an aspiring singer, like a teenager. And they, you know, put together the beat, the premise of the song, and they filmed a music video for it. And it was so like ridiculous that it became a huge viral sensation.
So bad it was good.
Yes.
Interesting.
And so I say funny, sad part about this, because you know how people can be on social media and the cyberbullying and all this stuff. So she was like, I don't know, like 15 or 16 years old, and she becomes like an overnight sensation. But at the same time, people were kind of mocking her while also enjoying the song. And so then there was this reality singing competition. I'm trying to remember the name of it now, but it was on last year with P. Diddy and DJ Khaled. And it was on Fox. And so she came out on stage because she's still trying to like prove that she's an artist and all this stuff. And then she was not selected, but they told her whole story and like saying like now she's like in her early 20s or something. And, you know, she seems like a really nice person and went through all this. But the whole thing is kind of like it's so like 2010s or like 2000 type of story where, you know, your parents pay for this. You become a star overnight, and then you still actually have aspirations to become a singer, whether they're warranted or not. And, you know, all these years later, all anybody does is when they bring up her name is think of that song.
It's funny when you say that, who I'm thinking of locally in the sports, and this is it sounds like there was some put-down connotation and all that, right? Not putting down this person at all, but when you think of one song and one singer, Julia Dale with the Heat. For years, sang the national anthem. And the last, she sang it, I think this past year, she's now in college, at, I believe the University of Miami. I remember she was introduced, and I was like, wow. She's like, you talk about.
She was like the good luck charm,
yes,
right? Especially
yes.
During the Big Three era.
Yes, yeah.
And now she's all grown up.
Yeah, yeah. It was like Muscle Boy with the, do you remember Muscle Boy with the, you don't. Okay,
no.
97, probably. 97 World Series for the Marlins. That run, there was listeners who know who Muscle Boy is are chuckling a little right now. Muscle Boy was this very skinny young boy, very skinny, who would flex muscles and you'd see ribs. You'd see a rib cage. And he was named Muscle Boy, and he was sort of like the mascot / good luck charm of the 97 Marlins. During, you know, it was like one of those sights you'd see, like, you know, going to the game, like Banana Man or whatever at the Heat games.
Right,
now. You know,
right.
that was sort of one of the sights of a normal Marlins game back then.
So Muscle Boy was kind of the unofficial mascot of that
run.
Yeah,
and now Muscle Boy must be, you know, he's I think it might have been young Greg.
It was 22 years ago. Oh, maybe it was the Biff in another lifetime.
I was about to say, 97, I was one, so I highly doubt it was me.
Yeah, I wasn't living down here at the time, so.
I was writing Deadline columns.
Well, hey, Dave, we've gotten some nice compliments on the text line. Now, of course, that doesn't always happen, but somebody, the most recent text is, great show today, guys, which is very nice. Appreciate everybody who's tuned in today. We also, there's a lot of people who are, I think, now have bought into the phenomenon that is the Biff, which it could be good or bad.
We're selling it. We're selling
we
that
are.
Concept.
We are. Somebody here texting says, totally remember Muscle Boy on the big screen at the stadium. There you go. So those were the good old days.
I think that had a bad ending because Muscle Boy's somehow one of the family members tried to patent it and sell T-shirts outside the,
oh boy.
You know, and the team got involved. Hey, you can't be selling stuff. There was some bizarre ending like it with that. But for most of the time, it was a feel when his picture was on the screen, people would, oh, it's Muscle Boy.
Hey, we want to let everybody know that Alex Dono and your colleague at the South Florida Sun Sentinel, Omar Kelly, are coming up next from 10 to 2. Dave, you, speaking of the South Florida Sun Sentinel, you're doing double duty today. You're not just doing the show this morning, but you're off to Delray Beach after this, which is the home place now, or the training ground.
Stomping ground.
Of Coco Gauff.
Yeah, I'm fired up.
The sensation of Wimbledon
so far.
Yeah,
you get a phenom in tennis, a phenom. In any sport, it's interesting, but certainly tennis because, what, she's 15?
Right.
And she beats Venus Williams in her opening match there. And now she won her second match. Now we're going – she's in the third round at Wimbledon, her first run, and not just winning, but winning in such a style that's captivating, you know, the tennis world and because it's Wimbledon, the sports world.
Yes. And so you're going to try to talk to people who are close to her.
Yeah, I'm just curious to see what's going on out there. There's family and friends is sort of how it's been. It was mentioned to me. So I'm curious to see, you know, I'm just going to go out there and see what the scene presents.
Yeah, we'll see if she can continue the run as she's already had a successful tournament, I'd say, by anybody's standards, for someone so young and defeating Venus and, you know, moving on and winning the second round. So it wasn't like a one-hit wonder type of thing. But at 15 years old, really, really cool. And, you know, we talked some Kyrgios earlier, some Nick Kyrgios, Rafa Nadal. But I think it's great, especially this time of the year. Wimbledon is – I always enjoy watching Wimbledon. I like watching the major tournaments in tennis and in golf, for that matter. But it's nice when there is a story that you can feel good about. There's a local connection, and it makes you pay attention to a sport that I think a lot of people in our audience maybe wouldn't otherwise.
Well, I don't – you know what? Tennis has allowed us – not to pay attention to it, because in some part you're interested in the individuals. It's an individual sport. There's no American man out there. You know, John Isner was, I think, ninth in the world at the Miami Open, and he was the highest. And the next is in the 30s. The top American women was still the Williams sisters, really. Mm-hmm. And Naomi Osaki's from here. She grew up in Broward. Yet she's claimed by Japan in a business deal as much as a personal deal. And so if Coco Gauff can make a run, you know, like you said, look, 15-year-old winning two, one off Venus Williams in Wimbledon, that's a successful tournament. But if she continues to make a run, you know, all of a sudden there'll be much greater interest in tennis around here.
Yeah, and we're all rooting for her, that's for sure. We'd love to see her continue this and keep it going. I'd love it.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.